against the flu and COVID. Find vaccines near you at vaccines.gov.
KFAI is proud to present Las Migas at the Dakota on Monday, November 11th. 20 years ago, four women joined forces and talents to rebirth themselves as Las Migas. In a short time, they found their way to the top of the international flamenco music scene. Las Migas have reached across musical barriers to explore faraway flavors, including country, pop, and urban music. However, they will always hold tight to their flamenco and Spanish music roots. Tickets for Las Migas can be found at the Dakota website. Visit dakotacooks.com for more details. KFAI will broadcast Turtle Island Voices Rising on Monday, November 11th from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Turtle Island Voices Rising is a special day of Native American and Indigenous programming curated by KFAI hosts and community partners. Your favorite regular Monday programs will return on November 18th. More information about Turtle Island Voices Rising, including broadcast schedule, will be found at kfai.org.
Welcome to Count of Stories, a program by people of color, for people of color, and everybody else. My name is Luz Maria Frias, and I am happily enjoying life, living life to its fullest without any constraints. I'm going to turn it over then to my peers.
And I'm Don Eubanks, a member of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indians, an associate of Dendrils Group.
I'm Halili, owner of the Other Media Group, VP of Programming at Ampers, and Counter Stories producer.
And I'm Anthony Galloway, pastor of St. Mark AME Church in Duluth, Minnesota, and partner at the Dendros Group.
We have a really special guest today to close us off and get our Black History Month really synthesized in a way that I think is going to be really valuable. As our listeners know, we've been taking an acid-based approach to our celebration of Black History Month, and we have an incredible guest and dear friend of ours, James Burroughs. I'm going to turn it over to you to introduce yourself, my friend.
Well, Luz, thanks for having me. I appreciate being here. And thanks, Don, Anthony, and Holly for meeting with me and making me part of the family. So glad to be here. I'm James Burroughs, Senior Vice President of Community Engagement and Government Relations at Children's Minnesota, where I also serve as the Chief Equity Inclusion Officer. And more importantly, I'm the father of Teresa Ann Burroughs, an 11-year-old sixth grader who I love to death, and she loves me. So everything is always good for me. So thanks and glad to be here today.
So James, you know, you introduce yourself in terms of your title and so forth, and there's so many routes that we can take this conversation. As I said, you know, we've really been focusing on the acid-based approach. Let's start with all the incredible things that you're doing in your role. And then we also want to go down in terms of the role that you've played with the Minnesota Business Coalition. And then I want to talk to you. We all want to hear about this post that you had on LinkedIn about the simple, practical ways to celebrate Black History Month that I think we all agree that it shouldn't be limited to only February, you know, that is, these are suggestions that should be carried on throughout the year. So let's start with your role at Children's and talk about some of the big changes that through your leadership have come about. I know I've been following you on social media and I've been really impressed to see the various initiatives that you're leading there along with the team.
I appreciate the compliment and the work we're doing here at Children's. It's unfinished. So let me say that first and foremost, we have a lot of work to still do, but we are proud of what we've done in the 5 years I've been here. So my role as Chief Equity Inclusion Officer, what we've been able to do there, and our focus has always been to reflect an organization where our employees look like our patients and family population. About 41% of our patients and families are patients and families of color. And at the time that I got here, only about 19% of our employees were employees of color. And what we wanted to say was, you know what, in communities that we serve, it's important for us to go out, recruit from there, make sure we have people that have access to jobs here, well-paying jobs, and also to invest in community and community partnerships and also through vendor supplier diversity relationships. So hiring retention is the main thing that we wanted to do, along with investing in the community and also through vendor relationships. On that front, some of the things we did last year, 56% of all of our new hires, which we had 1,400 of them, were people of color. And that's a significant increase. Over the last 5 years, we started out with 19% people of color as our employment population. Now we're at 29, I think it's 29.6%, somewhere around up, we're at 30%. We started off with 0% of our executive CEO suite team being people of color, and 33% of that group now, there are nine of us who report to our CEO, 33% of that group are people of color as well. Along the other fronts, on the community side, we started a group called the Collective for Community Health, which is focused on representation from communities that we represent and serve. And Lauren Gilchrist is the senior director for that. She's done a great job of bringing together our Native community, our Latino community, our Black community, and our Asian community all at the table to say, how do we do better in community? And as part of that, we're going to give out $500,000 in grants to organizations to help us address health equity. And those grants will go to community organizations doing work with us in that space and place. We started, when I got here, an internship program that started off with 8 interns of color. Now every year we hire 25 interns of color from high school all the way up through college, in partnering with Achieve, Twin Cities, Right Track, the Doherty Family College at St. Thomas, the Wallen Foundation, and other organizations to make sure that we have a pipeline in the future and also access to the future as well. 30% of all of our construction contracts, we have a lot of buildings that we own, and we have a lot of construction that takes place. 30% of all of those go to people of color and women, and through our subcontracting agreement. So if you have a general contractor business, you bid on something. In order for you to get the contract with us, you have to guarantee that 30% of that, 20% of people of color, 10% go to women as well. So I'll stop there, Luz, but we're doing a lot of great things in that space. And we're also addressing health equity by closing some of those disparities. We showed up at the legislature last year and helped pass the Crown Act. Our CEO testified on behalf of passing the Crown Act. We also helped pass the free lunch legislation as well, because food security is a challenge for all of our patients and families as well. So we've done a lot of good stuff, and I'm proud of the work we've done, and we have a lot more to do.
How does this, I love this, right? The hiring, the retention is always a big issue. I think this isn't the first time we've talked about retention, especially transplants who come to Minnesota for work. How does all of this affect the patient though, right? As we talk about this, especially you said 41% of your patients are patients of color. So how are all these benefits, you know, from the high level to the lowest paying job, how is that benefiting the patients that are coming in?
And that's a great question. Well, let me first hit on retention. One of the things we need to do a better job on is in retention, because our turnover rate for our Black, Latino, Asian, and Native employees is still much higher than our white employees. So this year we're focused mostly on inclusive leadership and retaining those great folks that we've been able to bring to our organization. I can talk a little bit about more how we're doing that later. But affecting the patient, it's a great question. What we've heard from our patients and families, and also what the literature, the medical literature tells us, is when people who look like our patients and families serve them, they're better health outcomes. There's a piece that Dr. Rachel Hardiman did, who's at the University of Minnesota, and some other colleagues, about when Black patients receive care from Black physicians, Black nurses, Black medical assistants, they had a higher health outcome, a better health outcome than they did with their white counterparts. Now, that doesn't mean to say that anybody white was doing anything intentional to not serve that particular patient. But when you have somebody from your particular race, ethnicity, you have somebody from your particular culture, you have somebody who understands your norms and those kind of things as well, patient care gets much better. When we talk to people about language, you can have an interpreter who understands the language, but if you don't understand the culture, you might not understand why there's differences in the Hmong culture, and there's differences in the African Liberian culture, and there's differences in our, you know, Colombian and Dominican brothers and sisters as well. When you understand that, you provide that service and people begin to trust you more. They begin to come back more. One of the things that it's a high disparity in is vaccines, or what we call combo vaccines. And combo vaccines means you get a vaccine as an early kid age and you come back before the age of two to get your next one. Well, if I don't have a relationship and I don't trust you, I'm going to get that first vaccine and you're not going to see me anymore. And that's typically happens with our patients and families of color, unless there's a provider that's connected to them some in some race, ethnicity way or culture way as well. So the reason we do it is patient care. The reason we want to address the disparity in hiring is because it leads to better patient care as well. And that's documented that it gets better patient care if you have those a more diverse workforce.
You're listening to Counter Stories. I'm Luz Maria Frias with co-host Khalid Lee, Anthony Galloway, and Don Eubanks, and our special guest, James Burroughs. This show is supported by AMPERS and the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For a full conversation, please visit counterstories.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Our experience in the NICU with two very high-risk, you know, we had two very high-risk pregnancies. Both of my children were born early, and they had all these different outcomes. And the NICU at Children's, let me say this. The fact that there was a Black nurse immediately who not just connected culturally in terms of lingo and could sense where our anxieties were. Everybody was trying to address our anxieties, but she was able to kind of clock it in a way that said the right things at the right times, translated when there needed to be translation, and then stuck with our child throughout. The outcomes for children of color who are born early, and there's a racialized outcome. Black, brown, indigenous children born early do better than their white counterparts. And of course, girls do way better, then there's a gap, and then there's the boys. But there's a gendered thing as well. But she, by nature of the nurse clocking it, having some conversation, getting a sense of to know who we were, they knew that we were what some who this data was going to help calm our anxiety. That's a culture of space that a culturally minded and equity minded group who's had that conversation before comes up with. And I just got to hand it to you, like our experiences have been powerful as it relates to the intentionality there. Even had we were at Children's for another issue that we were having, and one of the techs was, as they were putting some brain leads on my daughter, was singing the song One Little, Two Little, Three Little. And I was like, this cat is not about to say Indians, right? Mm-hmm. And he did. But before I could open my mouth to be like, oh, hold up, right? In the midst of like trying to figure out what's going on with my daughter, there was somebody else already on staff who was like, hold up, wait a minute. No, we're not going to do that. We'll be right back. And now we're at the door trying to listen to what's happening. Mm-hmm. And they had this skill set to an engagement to like, process that, deal with that, come back and talk to us about it, and like handled it, and we didn't have to do any work. It was refreshing. So I had to love on the culture that I have experienced at Children's, just to put that out there for you.
Well, I'm so glad to hear that, and I'm so glad to hear that they work together as a team, because I want to be clear, we are a system like other healthcare systems that actively practice systemic racism. If you walk into Children's, we actively practice systemic racism. Do I want to do it? Nope. But does it happen? Absolutely. But when it happens, how we handle it, how we have those conversations, how we discuss getting better is the piece I want to harp on. I'm glad to hear you got that kind of coverage. You got that kind of honesty and recovery is what we call it. You know, patient recovery from those situations that could have turned worse as well. So.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of my own experience. A doctor I had been seeing for years retired, and about a year and a half ago, I had to find a new physician. And the limited number of physicians of color were already full, with the exception of a few. And I ended up with a young Hmong doctor. And I've met with him at least two or three times. And the experience I have had with this young man has, for the first time in my life, I'm not saying like I enjoy going to the doctor, but I don't mind going to see this young man because he takes the time. I feel listened to for the very first time in my life. I feel there's someone who's actually listening to what I'm saying. And then we have a conversation about my health and this, that, and the other. And so for the first time, I feel like I'm actually taking part in what's happening. And I, it just blows me away. I mean, this young man has got to be half my age. And so, but, you know, and just probably starting in his practice and really beginning to build up. But that connection, and even though he's Hmong and I'm Native and Black, you know, there's just that connection, and he takes that extra time. And it's made a huge impact in my healthcare delivery personally. I guess I just want to comment on what you were saying, because it is true. There is a difference. And I'm not saying that there was anything wrong with my provider before, but we didn't have that kind of connection. And so the very thing you're talking about, I can attest to. It does make a difference, and it's fantastic.
So glad to hear that story. Because one of the things that I tell people is when you're listened to and you feel heard, you said nobody wants to go to the doctor, but you don't mind going to somebody that you know is hearing what you want to say. And also, too, valuing your thoughts, your opinions as well. And that's so important. And I love that it was cross-cultural in the sense that I tell people all the time, it doesn't have to be the race matches the race. It's sometimes just listening to and hearing as well. And I tell people all the time, you can be a white doctor and do just as good as listening, paying attention to, you know, cultural understanding as well. So thank you, Donald, for that comment. It really means a lot.
So I mentioned this, I think, to our counter stories family, but I'm expecting a lot of babies this year in my family.
Bring them all to Children's Minnesota.
We got one in May, one in June, one in July, and one in August. So like month after month after month. Okay. And one of the things that my cousins and my siblings who are expecting are looking at is, you know, some places offer the chicken diet for Hmong mothers, right? And, okay, so my other sisters who have had children were advising them, go to the places that have it because, you know, it means that they recognize you. It means that they recognize us and that they, you know, but it's terrible and you don't want it and mom's going to bring you better stuff anyway, but just the concept of just them having it in of itself is such a big thing, even though it's bland and we don't want to eat it, but just having it is such a great thing. And so I think that's just, you know, throwing that out there is one of those impacts of like offering those sorts of cultural things to your patients, make them feel more welcomed and more comfortable.
Now I'm going to say, that's great. But I'm going to say we got to do better in this sense. So if it is bland and it is bad, as a healthcare institution, there are probably like a zillion Hmong restaurants that I'm aware of that we could probably partner with our cafeteria and say, you know what? We're going to start to purchase goods and services from you of your high quality food that your you know, community already loves. And let's figure out a way that we can make that part of our service delivery. So our cafeteria is now providing the high quality seasoned, well-liked food that you want.
I mean, my mom would be happy to come in there a few days a week and cook for you guys. teach you all how to do it too, right?
There you go.
Boom, there you go.
I love it.
Get into the root of it.
I love it.
You're listening to Counter Stories. I'm Luz Maria Frias with co-hosts Khalid Lee, Anthony Galloway, and Don Eubanks. And our special guest, James Burroughs. This show is supported by AMPERS and the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For a full conversation, please visit counterstories.com or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm going to take us a little bit different because I want to make sure that we also highlight the work that you're doing as a leader
with the Minnesota Business Coalition. I think I may not be saying it fully, right? The full name. Remind me, correct me, you know, because I'm not saying it correctly. But then also describe those efforts and the incredible work and the strategies that are being implemented as a result of that.
Sure. And it's the Minnesota Business Coalition for Racial Equity, and affectionately known as MBCRE. And it was started right after May 25th, 2020, when George Floyd was murdered. And I have to give credit, James Moman, who at the time was working at General Mills in diversity and inclusion, called myself and other colleagues and said, we got to do something different. Because we just saw a Black man murder on national TV, and we are not doing enough that we need to do in Minnesota or nationally around this. So about 8 to 10 of us got together, and we said, you know what, we got to focus on strategies particular for a particular community. And we said, this needs to be a Black-focused strategy. And this strategy needs to look at four main things. One is, how are we gathering or getting philanthropy involved in our community to make sure that it's targeted for solutions that we need? Sometimes philanthropy has a big brush, and they'll say, we're going to address the issues for people of color. And last time I checked, Black issues may be different from Hmong issues, they may be different from Native issues, different from Latino issues. And within each of those categories, you already know that there's subsets of ethnicities in those categories too. But we said, from a Black standpoint, what does philanthropy have to look differently? We also said, from an employment standpoint, are we hiring and retaining and developing and promoting Black people in these corporations? The answer was no. The answer was, we're not doing enough fast enough. So how do we develop strategies from that? And these corporations that came together, we said, now we want to collectively address those issues. So philanthropy is one, employment was another. Another was business and economic development. How are we promoting Black businesses and investing in Black businesses going forward? And then the last one was, and one of the most important was, how do we look at public safety differently so we won't have another person who has a knee on their neck for 9 minutes and 39 seconds? We don't have another George Floyd. So we started that with about 60 different companies. And then fast forward to now, we have a managing director, and she's an amazing woman named Tiffany Daniels, who leads this work. So MBCR is doing a lot of great things. Tiffany's done a lot of great work. I will say this, the opportunity remains that we cannot say that 4 years ago is enough time by which we've solved world peace for Black people in Minnesota. So George Floyd happened, and I will say that the energy is waning among some companies to say, you know what, we had a Supreme Court decision that said you can't use race in bringing people into higher education. I'm going to extrapolate from that. It means, yeah, this stuff is over, so we don't really need to identify things for Black people in employment, in business development, in public safety or advocacy.
Very impressive, and I have no doubt that you'll continue to go down paths that are really enlightening for our community, but more importantly, get to the systems of what is driving all of these disparities, but also these injustices that are occurring in our community. Well, James, let's go down this path then. You had posted a list on LinkedIn with some really practical, I thought, sensible and within reach suggestions of how folks across community can really contribute towards and be just participatory in Black History Month, meaning it's not about just tweeting something, you know, being what I've read are called slacktivists, you know, where by tweeting something or posting on social media, you believe that you believe that you've done something towards Black History Month. What are some of the more proactive things, measures that all of us, right, can engage in, not only during Black History Month, but every day of the year? So I'm going to turn it over to you, James, to go down that list and edify us all.
I appreciate the opportunity to share the list. The first one is simple. Black History Month typically has 28 days. This year we have 29, but really it can have 365. And what does that mean? It could mean that you could spend money with Black-owned businesses for 365 days throughout the year. You know, you pick the business. It could be restaurants. It could be a consumer product. It could be a car dealership, whatever it is. But be intentional about where you spend your money is the first thing. Increase the number of people in leadership at your organizations who are Black. You know, board members, you get different perspectives at the table. Those are the leaders of your organizations. So making sure you have board members there that are racially diverse. The next one was Black leadership. So as I said before, when I started 5 years ago, zero people of color were in leadership in the C-suite at Children's. Now 33% of those positions are filled by people of color, and they actually 33% happen to be Black as well in those leadership roles. And that's intentional, that because as your organization has those folks at the table, you then can set the table for many different people to come to the table, because they're at the table helping to build it, as opposed to being invited later on as well. Another thing, sponsoring an event, you know, for high potential Black leaders. Can't just say that I can't find anybody, or if you do find somebody, you don't develop them or promote them, because you have to invest in their growth and development as well. Reminds me of, you know, law firms back in the day, Lou. So I'll let it go. It's like you could hire a whole number of lawyers of color, but they wouldn't give us any work. They wouldn't develop us and mentor us. And then they say, well, you know what? James can't make it or cut it. But James could if you gave him the opportunity to invest in. So that's another one. And then the last one I had here, or two of the last ones, is, you know, supporting Black community organizations through sponsorship. You know, it could be just simply sponsoring the Urban League celebration, sponsoring NAACP, buying a table at an NBCRE event as well. And then also, too, increasing your spending with Black media. Nobody can tell your story better than you. So a lot of times we don't get our stories told. The Star Tribune can tell one version of a story, but if you're investing in Black media as well, and also advertising Black media, that'll help the community as well. So as I say in the article, just do something. Don't just let Black History Month be like you posted, hey, happy Black History Month, and you talked about Carter G. Woodson or Martin Luther King or your favorite Black superhero, and then say, you know what, ooh, it's the 29th, I'm done. No, keep doing something throughout the year. And it can translate to Native American. We're going to do the same thing for Native American History Month. We do the same thing for Latino Heritage Month. We do the same thing for Asian Heritage Month. And then it becomes, you know what, we're not going to do it for just that month. We're going to do it for the whole year, and we're going to change the way we look at things to intentionally invest in and partner with community. So that's it in a nutshell, Luce. I just had a moment where I had to say, you know, just go do something and don't just sit there and celebrate a month.
I appreciate that. I would add a couple more.
Oh, sure.
Books by books that are authored by Black folks, right?
Yes.
Support the arts. You know, we've got Penumbra. We have other arts in Minnesota that are Black owned, Black led.
Yep.
There are nonprofits that you can be a donor to, you know, that are again Black led, like you said earlier, or volunteer. Volunteer as an expert, you know, to mentor someone, or volunteer to be part of the community. James, dear friend, so wonderful to have you and reconnect. Thanks for sharing your talent, your time, and your gifts with us today. I'm Luz Maria Frias, enjoying life to its fullest and living life the way it is.
And I'm Don Eubanks, member of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indians and associate at Dendros Group.
I'm Halee Lee, owner of The Other Media Group, VP of Programming at Ampers, and Counter Stories producer.
And I'm Anthony Galloway, pastor of St. Mark AME Church in Duluth, Minnesota, and partner at the Dendros Group.
And James?
James Burroughs, Children's Minnesota, Chief Equity and Inclusion Officer. Thanks for allowing me to be on the show and sharing my story with you today. And I appreciate the opportunity to bring forth to the community what we can do around racial equity, and we can continue to get better. Let's keep making sure that we keep doing the right thing and letting folks know we can get better if we keep investing in the future.
Thanks, James. We'll see you next time. This has been Counter Stories. What's on your mind? Let us know and find us online at counterstories.com and on Facebook and Instagram. Counter Stories is a co-production of the Counter Stories crew and Ampers,
diverse radio for Minnesota's communities with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
You're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM,